Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Tech Teachers. I'm Ray, a physics teacher.
And I'm Holly, a Spanish teacher.
And this is a show about technology and education, and as much as possible, where they overlap. This is show 84.
Yes.
And I know. I looked at the blog.
Yes.
To show you the updates I made.
Right. Email us at rayandholly@gmail.com. Holly is spelled H-O-L-L-Y-E. And you can also check out links to what we talk about at thetechteachers.blogspot.com. And you have done a little bit of rearranging.
Yes. So when you visit the blog now for show notes, et cetera, you will notice there's a Google search bar in the top right, which will give you the typical Google results for just our blog so that you can find something from the other 83 shows.
Right.
Or so that I can find something from the other 83 shows.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. Also, there's the other typical things on there. We still have the poll up.
Yep.
About your iPhone.
For another 20-some days. Right now, yeah. It's 64% of people either have an iPhone or want to hear about the apps.
Right. Okay. And then also we have an Amazon search box to the right there if you wouldn't mind just searching for anything you'd like to buy off of Amazon on there. It gives us just a little kickback.
And thank you, because lots of people are actually doing that.
Yeah.
So it's that's very, very good. Keep it up. We appreciate it quite a bit.
Thank you very much.
All right. So should we bring people up to speed on sports?
We're not a sports podcast. What are you talking about?
Just mention real quick that Penn State won.
We've had kind of an awkward start to the show. It feels very awkward. Anyhow.
Penn State won 66-10. I just like to put that out
He's
there.
He's an alum, so he always has to mention
Yes,
that.
And the Giants opened the season this Thursday, and we're coming off a fairly good season. So.
And the Chiefs open this coming Sunday.
They're not coming off a good decade.
Sunday. Yeah.
Century. No, they won a Super Bowl a long time ago.
I still root for them, though.
Yes. Okay. So now we got that out of the way. What's up first?
Well, you just wanted to mention a couple of news items as far as tech goes.
Yes. If you're in the market for a really small laptop and you're not looking for a Mac, Asus launched some additional models in their EE, the EEE PC thing. They're ultra portable. Oh, I can't remember what they keep calling these. Oh, well. They've got some catchy name they're calling them now, and I can't remember
what it is and put it on our blog.
No, we won't.
We
might not remember.
Uh-oh.
I don't think I remember. No, but we will put links to the Asus site, or at least to Amazon, to the different models.
Right.
But they're getting better. They're getting faster. The battery life's getting better. You know, they're in that $300 to, like, $600 range.
That's cheap.
Yeah, but they're not, you know, this is like a secondary PC. You know, this will not be your main laptop. But
just take it to the coffee shop or on a road trip.
Yes. And you know, with the flash-based memory and all that. Mm-hmm. But they're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
I've a couple times now been like, should I buy one of those? And I've decided no.
Yeah. But
I've come close. So, and then on the Apple front, you might want to wait another week or two if you think about buying a Apple computer. They're having some big announcement. I think it's like September 9th. I can't remember.
Sometime
in September, they're going to be doing a refresh, certainly to the iPod line. And then also, hopefully, I'm hoping to MacBooks, MacBook Pros, and iMacs.
So just hold off and see what the announcement is before you buy anything.
Yeah, the iMac refresh is probably just a processor bump up, but the MacBook Pro could be new cases. It could be a bunch of different stuff. So hopefully they'll do it. Certainly to the MacBook, they'll do something.
Do they put on the? Do they have sales then?
No. Yeah, the prices usually stay the same, but you get the new design or you get the new processor
but I mean,
or the new memory.
Ones.
Oh, Apple does sell stuff. They have their refurbished stuff, and they does have discounted other items. But usually you don't want to go that route.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a huge discount. With educator discounts already. Or actually, if you buy from Amazon, you don't have to pay the tax. So the next Mac I buy will probably be through Amazon. You don't have to pay the tax. And there are various rebates that Amazon does that makes it almost the same as the educator discount, which I had no idea. I know they do it for the iMacs. I don't know if they do it for all of them.
So the advantage would be not paying taxes?
Yes. Then? And the not paying taxes along with the rebate is way less than your educator discount plus tax if you buy it through Apple or from the Apple store. And you can still buy like Apple Care and everything else. So my next Apple computer, in all likelihood, will be bought through Amazon because of the no tax thing, as long as there's still no tax. If you live in a state where you got to pay tax on internet purchases and all that nonsense, and you actually claim it and you're a good person, or not a good person, but a super law-abiding, a super up law-abiding citizen, we're not in one of those states. So no tax here.
Right.
Which is a big deal if you're buying a, you know, $1,000 purchase.
Right.
You know, or more, you know, $2,000 purchase, whatever it might be. Okay.
All right, well, speaking of Apple, you've had a little trouble with your mail recently.
Yes, OS X's...
Okay, explain this, because I'm not a Mac user, so what's going
on? OS X has built-in a mail program.
So that...
Like Outlook, except Apple's version, you know, a very simplified version.
System.
Yeah, well, not into the... Well, it does have some hooks in the operating system for certain features and stuff, but basically it's their mail client.
Okay.
Okay, simple as that. It's the thing that checks email. And I use it to check my... all my Google accounts that I have, the different Gmail accounts that I have, and they are, I'm checking them via the IMAP so that when you make a change on one, it changes on the other. I love that. Change on the phone, change on the computer, change on the web. It updates, you know, it keeps everything in sync. So you don't have like one set of flags and another set of flags, or that you read it or you didn't. And what happened is it stopped working. I would hang up, I'd have to force quit it. And I did some research and lots of people were having this problem.
Okay.
So, you know, it works fine for one account, but when you start putting in multiple accounts, and some people have problems with just one, but when I had multiple accounts in, it would basically freeze and I have to force quit all the time, which is the equivalent of, you know, control delete in Windows and ending task. So it would hang up. Okay. It wouldn't freeze the computer, but
Is this just recently or?
Yes.
It has been working then in the past.
It had been working in the past, okay. And I did some research and lots of other people are having this problem. So I was just like, well, forget this. I don't, you know, I'm not that tied to their mail client. It's okay, you know. I like it for a variety of reasons, but it's not the end of the world if I go to something else. So I did some research, and now I'm using Thunderbird, which is from the people that give you Firefox.
Okay.
It's their mail client. So I'm running that on OS X now.
So do you
Thunderbird.
Have to download
It's a
software.
Program, yes. Okay. It's a program. We'll put a link to Thunderbird in the show notes.
Is it just for Mac?
No, it's also for Windows.
Oh, I'm
it's
sorry,
also for Windows and for Linux, because it's like Firefox. It's, you know, they make it for everything, and I like it. It's fine. It's the equivalent to me of mail. The only thing that is a little bit inconvenient is when I do searches, system wide searches, it doesn't search within the mail in there. But it's all my secondary accounts anyway. My main account's still in mail.
Okay.
Now, for anybody that wants to do this, on the Windows side, it's pretty easy to get things out. If you want to go from Outlook to Thunderbird, it's pretty easy to get your contacts out, export them, and import them into Thunderbird because you don't want to have to type in people's emails.
Right.
You want them just all show up, etc. On OS X with mail, it's not so easy. So there's actually a website that'll do it for you. And because I needed to get out some of the stuff that I send mass emails. So it wasn't like I just needed 5 emails. I needed to have, there's a for my science club, I sent out an email to like 50 people. Well, I didn't want to retype all 50 of those, you know, names in. So there's a website. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And it will take it's called vCard to CSV Converter. And it does it online. And it'll give you the file. And they don't keep any of your information or anything like that. And it was very, very useful, and it allowed me to get all my contacts into Thunderbird from my address book in OS X. Now, if you don't have a need for that for Thunderbird, you might have a need for it for a variety of other reasons, and this is how you could get them out of address book.
So, okay.
And the reason I still leave them in address book and use mail is because it syncs up with my iPhone and et cetera, et cetera. So.
Let me ask you, why do people use Outlook and mail?
Versus what?
Versus just something that's online, like Gmail.
Oh, well.
Completely online. Like, you don't have to install.
Well, you don't have to sign in. There's the first biggie, right? You don't have to have a web browser open.
Okay.
The mail client. Also, it can be for offline viewing. So if you want a hard copy, or not a hard copy. If you want a copy of the stuff on your computer, just in case, you have it. Whereas,
is that really that big a deal, though?
I want all my emails forever, so to me, yes. I want to be able to keep all my emails.
Okay, so you think Google's going to go away? Or
no, I don't think Google's going to go away, but it's more user-friendly. There's more power in searching it and organizing it, and it's a nicer interface. I like having a mail client access that information.
Okay.
I prefer, I much, much, much prefer it over using web-based mail. I think it's also, seems to me to be a little bit faster because you're not, you don't have the internet connection in the way. It's all stored locally if you choose it to do it that way. You just have more options. You just have more options.
Is that just because you're a little old school on that? Because
I'm old school. I don't know.
It just seems...
silly?
It seems like something somebody that was maybe 50
or also 60. Also automatic checking. I know there's like Gmail notifiers and stuff like that, but I don't want it to have a web browser open. I want it to automatically, you know, let me know when I've got mail. That's the other reason. And then this does that. I don't have to go to the website to check to see if I have mail. I just look at my mailbox. So now Google at some point, I'm sure, will have a better app or notifier than they currently do. I've just never found one that I liked. I've tried a bunch, but they all bug me or they don't work that well.
Right.
And they don't work. The other thing is for multiple accounts, they don't work real well. So since I'm juggling, like if I had just one email account, I didn't used to do this, but when I've got like five email accounts that I'm using on a regular basis and checking, this makes it so I can look at one screen. That's the biggie. You look at one screen and you can see that you don't have any email for five accounts. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Whereas otherwise, Gmail, if you're using the web interface, you got to sign in, sign out. Sign in, sign out. It's a pain, right? To check five different logins.
Can't you have it forwarded to one of your accounts anyway?
Yeah, but now you've got all the mail going into one mailbox, and if you've got a junk account, well, sometimes you don't want to check your junk account. You don't want to deal with it right then and there. So it's all forwarding. Yes, you can set up labels and everything else, but this is cleaner for me at least.
Okay. Everybody's different.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's get away from the Apple stuff.
For a second. This is for an everybody stuff.
Right.
Firefox. I was looking at the statistics, and we have a large chunk of people that use Safari and a large chunk of people that use Firefox to come to our website.
Really?
So figured we should start mentioning some more extensions for Firefox. And I don't use Firefox that much anymore. I might be going back to it here soon because of some of the extensions that are available for Twitter and for Evernote, which we'll get to later. But one that might be very useful if you have more than one computer, and I have no idea if we mentioned it before, but Foxmarks. It basically, you add a bookmark on Firefox on your laptop, and now you go sit down on your desktop, and it'll be there. So
okay.
Check it out, Foxmarks, see if it'll work for you. There are other ones as well. There's plenty of other ones for doing that kind of stuff as well.
But you have to sign in then, right?
Oh, yeah, but you know, you can save your information and make it automatic. So
okay.
Yep.
Interesting. Well, let me just interject here with something that we've talked about before, Google Docs.
Yes.
Google Documents. But I've been using it a lot recently since I had one of my computers go kaput. And I just think...
Your 20-pound...
Yes, my...
behemoth.
Desktop replacement.
Bowling
laptop.
Ball.
Yeah. But I have a laptop that my school has given me to use. But I can't download any software.
That's a
that
bit
kind
of a bowling
thing.
Ball, too. But yeah.
Yeah. But it's nice to have.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's better than nothing.
I'm actually very much enjoying Google Docs.
Yes.
So I would just say check it out. You know...
It's getting better and better, right?
Right. It is. And you can share documents really easy, and it works a lot like the Microsoft suite.
It has probably what most people need.
Right. If you just want some basic,
yes,
you know, computing type of stuff,
yes,
I'd say that is
for what 95% of, you know, the typical user uses. It's probably got the features they need.
Right.
So
yeah,
I use it from time to time. I mean, I use Word because it's on my computer at school, but.
Mm-hmm.
I probably should start to use Google Docs because nothing I do is fancy. It's just, you know, some text.
Very basic.
And that would help me organize it because it would be saved online as opposed to the hundreds of folders and files that are on my school's network that at any time could go down and disappear. So I trust Google way more than I trust the servers at my school. So
I should start to do that. Don't they back up though?
They back
like
up one time. Yeah, one
up,
time or? They both failed. That was my first year teaching, and they lost grades.
Don't say that. I'm going to get scared now.
Oh, yeah. Don't trust it. Don't trust the offsite backup.
Oh,
so.
No.
I don't know how that happened. That was a long time ago. I have not lost anything since then. That was 4 years ago.
Not to get off on a tangent, but here we go. my school district had a virus on Friday. I don't know if
maybe.
I told you that. Well, they said they... Well, yeah, okay. That's what
oh,
I
well,
said.
They had
that's
a virus.
Yeah, and so
whoop-de-doo.
All of the computers... Well, I think that was a big deal.
Yeah, okay.
No? Okay. All right, so here is your next love. After Twitter, your new love is Evernote.
I think they might be taking a little too far there.
I don't think so. You get so passionate about some of this
stuff. I tried Evernote. It's kind of like Twitter. I tried it. I was like, yeah, this might be good for somebody.
A long time ago.
But I was like, not for me. Well, not a long time ago. This is not as long as Twitter. This was like a month or two ago.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this isn't for me. And then I'm like, I kept hearing about it. And I was like, oh, maybe I should give Evernote another shot since I was kind of wrong about Twitter. It actually is very useful and interesting. And holy cow. Once I started to play around with it, I realized that this is something that I will use. And I recommend using it's as far as
what is it?
It's kind of tough to explain.
It helps you stay organized.
Yes.
How about what's it for?
Okay. What's it for? It's for a lot of different things. And in the show notes, I'm going to put links to some articles of some different ways people use it, seven ways to use it, etc. It's one of those tools that for each person, I think they're going to use it differently. You could use it for as simple as a bookmark organizer. You could use it to keep track of notes. But the killer app for me is that you can take a picture with your iPhone or you can take a picture with your MacBook, okay, or whatever.
Or your cell phone.
Or your cell phone camera. Yeah, your cell phone camera. Whatever you've got camera-wise. You can take a picture and you upload it to Evernote, okay? And it makes text searchable in pictures. So this is useful. Like the other day I saw an ad in the newspaper for a hockey game. I was like, oh, I might go to that. And I took a picture of it. So now that text is searchable. So I can type in Sprint Center and it finds it.
Right.
Okay. And you could do this for an education. You could do this for like if you have notes on a board, take a picture. You know, a whiteboard, if you write neat enough, it's going to recognize.
You don't write neat enough.
I don't. Well, it depends on which when I'm writing.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes some pretty bad writing, but mine's up and down, I think, which is what messes it up. It's kind of. I don't write in a straight line on the board. It also worked with, I took a picture of an ad from Micro Center, an electronics store, and that made everything on that page searchable. So it's a way to keep track of things, and you put them in notebooks, and you can have more than one notebook. So you can also use this as like a to-do list manager. They have a couple good videos on their website, and we'll put it in the show notes. Of you know ways to use it and how the software works. And the nice thing, the thing that makes it really great, this kind of stuff has existed for a long time, the recognize a text in an image, is the syncing part. So you're in the store and you take a picture of something with a price on it. I used to do that a lot. Well, now if I put it to Evernote, I can be like, oh, what was I looking at in the store? It was a TV, and I can search for like, you know, plasma or LCD or whatever, and up will pop all the ones that have that on the little tag in the store. So it's that at home or on the iPhone, and that's the power of it is that you can be on the go and then access it later at your leisure at any computer. So there's a web interface. So it doesn't matter if you have anything installed, you can get to your notes. There is a client, so you can have software running on OS X or Windows.
Why would you want software running offline?
Once again, this is like the mail versus Gmail thing, right? Okay. If the software is running on the computer, it's quicker, it's snappier, generally speaking, and it has a little bit more feature-wise. And you don't have to log into a web page every time. You have the program running.
Yeah.
And it also allows for shortcuts. So like when I'm on my MacBook, I hit, what is it, Control Apple and C, and I can take a picture of my screen and automatically put it in Evernote.
Okay.
And in a browser, you find something on a website you want to save, you can add a bookmarklet. So they've allowed it, bookmarklet being something where you just, it's like a bookmark, you click it, and it sends it to Evernote. They also allow you to tag everything. So you can add all these different tags so that you can find the stuff by what it's tagged as.
So you can search by tag or by text on whatever it was.
Yep, so you could tag things like, you know, shopping list, so everything you need to buy next time you're out of the store, or mm-hmm. to-do, just random to-do stuff, phone calls, whatever it might be. So it's just a great way to organize a multitude of types of information. So you can have pictures, mm-hmm. text, and also, this is a new feature, and this is what really caught my attention, kind of made me try it again, is that you can record a voice note on the iPhone and then it syncs up with Evernote. So now you have that reminder wherever you're at a voice note.
Can it be any type of cell phone? Or?
Nah, the features vary depending on the phone.
Okay.
Okay. You can even, I mean, it's just they've made it so that you can basically get information into their server, the Evernote, the system, any way you want. There's so many ways to do it. At first, it might even seem like, well, which one should I even use? But once you start to play around with it, you really start to see that, hey, this is useful. For receipts, it's certainly useful. You can search, you take a picture of a receipt. Now it's, you know, that's text that you can search, even though it's a picture. So.
And it all goes into one spot.
Yep, all goes into one spot. And there's lots of different ways to organize it. And it's pretty simple to use. There's a few little things that could be a little bit more obvious about it and how it works. But, you know, you play around with 15 minutes and you got the whole thing figured out. Right. So check it out. I don't think I did a very good job of selling it, but if you try it, I think it'll sell itself. Okay. I think it'll sell itself. So, and by the way, we don't know Evernote. We don't do advertising. So,
yeah.
I'm not really trying to sell it. I'm just saying, check it out. Check it out.
You it's are free. It. Oh, you want to it's tell free. About it. Yeah.
The service is free. The one thing that does worry me about this is if someday there's no free level. Like, if you use it a ton, like, you can pay $5 a month or whatever and get more upload. You can always download and view what you put into it. But someday maybe they wouldn't have the lowest level free. That kind of worries me a little bit. The only other thing that is a concern of mine is once you get all this information in, there's, on the Mac side, currently, there's not a whole lot of easy ways to get it out. Which you know, if depending on if you're planning on using this for 20 years, that might be a concern.
Right.
So, but it's pretty much replacing my to-do lists from iCal. I'm moving away from iCal and towards Evernote for my, you know, lists.
But tagging isn't the only way you can organize like a to-do list or.
No, well, I mean, just.
Because I think tagging is, it can be a little problematic in that you have to actually remember
what
that
you
have
as?
Something. Well, yeah. No, just that you even have something that you need.
No, you can have like different notebooks. So you could have a notebook filled with to-dos.
Yeah.
And then you can also just look at all the stuff. There's a real nice, you can just flip through visually, like either list view. It's like almost like email when it's list view. There's thumbnail view so you can see all the pictures and the lists and stuff. It pretty much works the way you want it to.
Okay.
There's a few small things they need to fix, especially on the iPhone app, but overall it's extremely useful. And I had no idea until I started thinking about it. I'm like, oh, I can take a picture of my whiteboard every day, which I was already doing to keep track of. And now instead of having to get my iPhone out every time I want to look at the picture or sync my pictures up to my computer to look at them, I'm like, well, if I don't feel like getting my phone out at school, I can just open up the laptop. You know, go to the Evernote website and boom, there's my notes from Friday to remind me what to do Monday.
Okay.
You know, so that, and I was already doing that on my phone without Evernote. Now it just adds another level of I can get it anytime I want, wherever I want
that
information.
Another level of usability.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. All right.
That was a lot of talking.
Yeah, you talked a lot.
You take over. What's next?
Let's talk about what's going on in our classrooms. I know that last time we really spoke a lot about Twitter, and you're using this. How's it going?
Good. The students seem to be using it.
Oh, you got to set it to private, though, right?
I did set it to private after I got everybody to join. I just remembered to do that. It's not really a big deal, I don't think, if I didn't, but at least if students don't, if they send something out, at least not. It was one extra level of just to make sure, but it really shouldn't matter. But this will make it so nobody else can follow me, that account. Oh, while we're on the subject, twitter.com/psharkr, PSHARKR. You can follow me there. So.
Your personal account, not your school one.
Yeah, no, that's not my school one.
Right.
No. I'm not giving that one out.
Very
so.
Good.
It's going to be too hard to figure out, but. All right. You can't follow me anyway. I put it on private.
Yeah.
But it's going well. Kids seem to like it. Actually, I got Twitter.com unblocked for students so they can access it at school. And this is good because next semester now I can have all the kids sign up again because otherwise it's going to be a real problem, like do it at home type thing.
Right.
That'll never work. And there's a math teacher that's doing it for one of her classes so she can send out text messages with the homework, same type of idea that I'm doing. And I might even be presenting to the district level to – on Twitter, on the uses for Twitter for education, Blogger, and Delicious.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
All right. What about you in your classroom?
I'm not using Twitter. quite honestly, I'm just trying to settle into my new school district. And I'm a traveling teacher this time. And so, you know, I go from room to room, and that's been a little bit of an adjustment for me not to have everything.
I can't even imagine. I would be a basket case. I remember student teaching. That was horrible when I went from room to room.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult to get used to, but, you know, I try to have two sets of everything so I can at least have two places to keep my stuff. And
it's crazy.
Yeah, but they do have docking stations for your laptop, so you just, you know, lift it out and take it to the next room.
As long as it works, right?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Yeah. It does.
Oh, good.
It's been pretty good.
All right. I'd say.
Yeah. But in any case, talking about since I've taught Spanish for a few years now and you've taught physics, you know, we're moving past the being new teachers phase, right?
Yes.
So
the newness is worn off. We're grizzled veterans.
I don't know about veterans.
No,
yet.
I'm kidding. We're not.
Not quite.
No, definitely not.
But you know, it just occurred to me that you can become really stale. And you're teaching. I'm teaching at a different level, like high school level, block scheduling, so that's very different. But you have to do certain things.
Do you want to say I'm stale?
No, I was actually going to ask you what you do to keep yourself from becoming stale.
Because, do it. Don't keep too much. That's my key thing. I recreate a lot of stuff. Now, people might think that's crazy.
I think that's ridiculous.
I do. I recreate, like, I keep it in the extent that I know it's there. If I really need to go back, I'm like, oh, I had a really good activity that was there. Yeah. But I try to come up with whatever, like for my openers and my activities. Some of them I reinvent or redo every year.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I remember what I did last year.
Right.
You know, or I might even look at the old one, but I change it. I twist, you know, I make it different. I try to make it better. I try something new.
Right.
I'm not afraid to, and this year it's really helped that I have new equipment. Mm-hmm. Which has given me a chance to try some new stuff. But I just, you know, I try to do stuff differently. I'm okay with recreating. So,
I mean, I could see your method in that because you do want to stay excited and fresh about what you're talking about.
Because if I just print out if I do a whole week of what I, exactly like I did it last year, then I'd be bored to death.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I do assign the same problems so that I know which ones the kids can handle, right, which ones they can't. I do assign the same problems just about every year. But as far as everything else, I try to keep it a little bit different. There's some labs that I recycle and stuff, but
see, I think the problem can become that you might forget what you have, you know? So I keep a running list of what I used specifically.
I do that for demonstrations.
Yeah, you know, just those bells and whistles. You know, sometimes you can forget about making it exciting because you've already taught it several times, and that's the danger. So I always keep a list.
That's what I try to do.
And make myself pull it out again and get excited about it.
Yes, so every once in a while I ask myself, if I was sitting in that class, would I have been entertained?
That's a good idea.
And if the answer is no, 2 days in a row, I start to think, oh man, I'm not doing a good job. I need to find something to get their attention again.
Right.
So, I mean, even one day, sometimes it's necessary the first day we're doing something. But, I mean, even then, no, I try to make sure that that there's something that's going to entertain them in that, you know,
right,
if not more than one thing.
Right.
This year, to keep myself fresh, I've been saying I was going to do this. I've been saying I was going to do this. And I never got around to it. I'm incorporating clips from the Mythbusters. Now, this requires me to watch them and figure out just which parts are relevant,
mm-hmm,
into my physics class. In the past, in AP Physics, we watched them from time to time,
right,
parts of it. Or after the test, we watch whole episodes. And what I did at the end of last year was when we were watching the whole episodes, I wrote down the time codes. And now I'm saving them in Evernote, so they'll never go away.
Right.
I used to use stickies on my desktop, but they disappear or I delete them or whatever. So this is a way to keep them for next year.
Right.
And I'm doing that. So I'm trying to just add something new every time I teach physics.
Yes.
Just as long as you keep adding new,
that's
you're
what I was
going
to say.
You can cut out something old, but
I have
keep
a goal
new.
That every unit I teach, I at least add one new thing. Usually it's more than that, but
yeah,
one new thing to the repertoire, you know, that you have. So you become seasoned and an excellent teacher. But also I think it's really important to remember that it's the first time that they've heard that information. Because, you know, I forget, oh gosh, I've taught this 8 or 9 times, this particular topic. But they're sitting in the seat for the first time hearing it.
Yeah.
Not only do I need to make it exciting, I need to make it understandable.
Yes. So, yeah. You got to do both.
Well, that's sometimes hard to remember to do.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I can see that. I think one thing that would help if you're a science teacher is get some new stuff to play with, like order something or press for new sensors or whatever.
You have some of those, right?
Yes, I do. We got at the end of last year, we got 12, we'll put a link to it, Vernier Lab Quest and a bunch of sensors to go along with it. Yeah, we talked about them last year. I think we linked to it before. We linked to it again. But I hadn't used it with physics yet. Because we got them right at the end of the year, and I allowed AP Physics to play around with them, had them pick labs and try them and stuff like that after the test, the AP test, which, oh, by the way, they did great on.
Right.
I think we already talked about that, note, didn't we?
I think so.
They did They did good. And I realized when I was doing these activities, I'm like, sometimes technology makes things easier.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes technology makes things more entertaining. But the best use of technology is when it presents the material in a way that was not possible and now makes the learning far superior to what existed before it. Okay. So it actually makes it a more educational experience, not just adding some entertainment to keep them interested or adding some ease of use for the teacher or the students. And that's what these sensors actually did in the terms of motion. Because the kids could actually hold it in their hands, look at the, it's like a little PDA, it's got a color screen on it, touch screen. They could hold the lab, I can't keep forgetting the name, I think it's called LabQuest. They could hold the LabQuest and the motion sensor together in their hand, walk around, you know, like forwards and backwards, and see in real time what the position time graph and velocity time graph, which is important in physics as we start with this motion, what it looked like as they were walking.
Right.
That just, you know, did not exist before we had the handheld device. Even with me showing it up on the big screen, like throwing a ball up into the air, well, that's great, but it's not them walking around.
Right.
This is something where the wireless it's completely new. And then there's another activity where I had them jump. Okay, so they're holding the device and they're jumping and watching their graph in real time. I mean, it just, the walking is a little bit better in my opinion because it happens slowly. And they had to try to like match the graph that was there with their walking back and forth. I mean, it was just a completely new experience that was not possible, at least, you know, that I could find where you could get everybody able to do this, you know, in a block. You know, like everybody could walk around and do this in one block, 90-minute time period, on top of getting some other questions and stuff answered. I mean, it was amazing. It just dawned on me when I was seeing a kid do that. I was like, this is not possible any other way that I can think of.
Right.
So it added a new dimension to teaching that didn't exist before.
Cool.
So that's the great use of technology. Yeah. I mean, document cameras are nice to have, but, I mean, you could just have everybody open up the book and look at the page or huddle it around and watch the experiment. Projectors are big TVs, you know, but this was something that was new. So
cool. Good. Any other ideas on how to not become stale?
So buy some new toys. I would say stay current. Listen to our show. We're preaching to the choir, right? But just not be afraid to try new things. I think that's the biggie.
I also think, too, I stepped into somebody else's classroom the other day.
That works great.
And it was excellent. I got some brand new ideas. I was only in there for 15 minutes.
Yep.
And
I do that.
See a different way of presenting something.
I stop by teachers and I just see what they're up to.
Right.
Maybe they don't like it, but. usually I ask, you don't mind, I'm like, it's okay if I watch for a few minutes, and they're usually like, yeah, no problem. And I'll watch and see what they're doing and try to incorporate that in my classroom.
Yes, absolutely. So
old and young. This is like just random all over the place. Sometimes I even walk into like an English classroom and I do that. So
cool.
So you could get ideas from
other disciplines.
Other
fields, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think any form of collaboration is nice if
it's not forced. Don't force teachers to collaborate. That's stupid.
Well, a good teacher already wants to collaborate anyway.
Yeah,
and would do it on their own time.
And you don't want to make people bitter about collaboration.
Right. Well, like in 10 years,
I'll probably be bitter about collaboration.
Yeah.
I might already be a little bitter.
I'm a little bitter about having to fill out paperwork about what we collaborated about.
No, that's just stupid.
That to me is busy work, and that's how I feel about that.
Okay, we probably should stop complaining because this could go on for 10 minutes about busy work in education.
Let's not go down that road.
Let's just, everyone that's listening that's a teacher already understands that's part of the job, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, all right. What else do we got? Is that about it?
I think that's it, yes.
All right. Check out the show notes at thetechteachers.blogspot.com. Don't forget to dig our show. I fixed it. We have the, or Dig fixed it. We have the picture up there now. We're like three away from being on the front page of education. So please, if you log in, dig a story or dig one of our episodes, dig our show, and we'll make that front page again.
Woohoo.
Woohoo. Also, there's the Google search bar or Google search whatever
box.
Search box in the upper right. And the Amazon, please keep using the Amazon search box. We get a percentage of, and we don't.
It doesn't cost you anything.
It doesn't cost you anything, but we get like a 4% cut of, or not 4%, I forget what it is. We get a percentage of the purchase price.
Right.
So it's like making a donation for towards us and help support the show, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Right. Also, you can email us at rayandholly@gmail.com. Holly is spelled H-O-L-L-Y-E.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Until next time.